Hello, and welcome to another episode of Technically Biased. My name is Kristen Gutu, and today's guest is Sasha Stoikov. He is a senior research associate at Cornell Financial Engineering in Manhattan, and his research studies algorithms in high-frequency financial trading, online rating systems, and recommendation systems. And in these various domains, he has come across algorithmic biases such as survivorship bias, popularity bias, and inflation bias. Sasha also founded Picky, a startup that gamifies music ratings. The ratings produced by users on Picky can mitigate algorithmic biases. In a recent paper, he uses this data to answer a simple but provocative question: are the popularities of artists like Justin Bieber or Taylor Swift truly justified? What a controversial topic. Before we begin, can you please further introduce yourself, Sasha?
Yep, I got a PhD in math and I come from Switzerland, so it made sense to me at the time to try to apply it to finance so I could, get a job after I finished my studies. And so I ended up teaching financial engineering in several universities, and my research was in high frequency trading, and that's sort of my day job right now. So I work at Cornell Tech in New York City on this cool Roosevelt Island campus. I was a bit influenced by working with tech-focused colleagues in Cornell Tech and thinking a little bit about data more broadly than just in finance and large data sets. And I came across this music data set that was, users and their listening playlists. And I started thinking about collaboration, filtering, recommendation algorithms. And, ultimately that got me to found Picky, this music app. While doing all that, I think I've encountered a lot of algorithms and biases and unintended consequences of algorithms. So yeah, when I came across your podcast, I thought, okay, this is something that is very relevant and interesting to me.
I love it. And before we dive in too much, can you discuss the differences of survivorship bias, popularity bias, and inflation bias, and how they relate to Picky?
Yeah, so survivorship bias is a very common one in the finance industry. So it just means that essentially the companies that are worth a lot today, if you invested in them, 10 years ago, you'd be very rich. So it's a mistake that sometimes engineers do when they're thinking of, okay, what is my universe of stocks? The S&P 500. They take today's 500 most valuable companies, and then they go back 20 years and they say, okay, how would I have invested in these stocks 20 years ago? And no matter what, how you cut it, if you randomly build a portfolio or put all your money in one of the stocks, if you do this, you'll find that you do well. And in fact, it's sort of a trap. So that we often, when we look at historical data, especially financial data, we get fooled into thinking we're good at picking stocks. So that to me is like one of the things I teach in my classes, like on day one. And the other biases you mentioned that I encountered a little bit later in my career. So, for example, popularity bias in streaming apps. This is, maybe I can go deeper into it, but it's essentially the idea that the popular get more popular because the algorithms essentially have our listening data, and the things that are most listened, the algorithm can't help but think that they're better. And then they recommend them more, and it goes into a feedback loop. Not unlike this survivorship bias in finance, where the rich get richer, but it's a similar effect. And the last one I think is a bit less well known. It's this inflation bias. I've encountered it a lot in rating systems. The idea that, the most extreme example would be in an Uber. If you look at the rating of your driver, most likely it's going to be a 4.97. And one of the reasons is that when we get into a cab, we know that if we give a bad rating, it'll harm the driver. That's one of the biases. But this happens also if you go to rate restaurants. There's also the idea that in most ratings apps, you have a search bar. So the owner of a restaurant can give a 5-star rating to their own restaurant, you can rate your own podcast. So maybe you've done it, but you were limited to one rating. But that's quite typical on podcasts. People will say, "Oh, give us a 5-star rating." And so all of these are inflating the ratings. And why is that a big deal? Well, the problem is at some point, if all drivers or all restaurants have a high rating, it's quite hard to distinguish the great from the just okay. I would say these three biases are very hard to get rid of, but they can hurt. And although we often think of algorithms as being this sort of unemotional, perfect thing, actually these biases often creep in accidentally. I don't know that the designers of these algorithms have malevolent intentions. It's just that mistakes happen if you don't really think hard about the design of the algorithms.
I agree with all of that. And you made some interesting points. So I'm curious because each platform obviously has their own algorithms, but they all work in very similar ways. So when you're working with Picky, does it pick up on music recommendations and how it's being promoted, let's say on TikTok versus Instagram? Because I know, like you said, it's this feedback loop where even if it's not necessarily the music you like most, it's pushing you in a direction further and further. So you're listening to more of the same stuff. So, what have you noticed about these different platforms and how it's influencing the music that's becoming popular?
There's a lot of debate about what algorithms people are using. So, and often people even publish these, and things like the algorithms that Spotify or TikTok use, you could do research and find what they're based on. I think the thing that's less talked about is the data that they use to train on and whether that data, and even more specifically, the interface collecting the data is encouraging certain biases unintentionally. So the interface of Spotify is basically the interface listens to what you listen to. So it hear, you know, it can keep count of your plays. I think TikTok or Instagram are, especially if you're thinking about the reels, they're looking at the amount of time you're spending on a particular real and trying to interpret that. And those are very passive or implicit data collection mechanisms. Picky is a very explicit system of data collection. So Picky, it's a ratings app, but you're presented with music clips that you have to express an opinion, whether neg dislike, like, or super like on every music video you see. So it's a different nature of data set, whereas the apps you're more used to tend to use what I would call a surveillance system. So spying and trying to infer what your intentions are. They do have certain problems at the moment of collecting the data. So if you play a song, does it mean you love it, or does it mean that maybe you were in the next room and you didn't really want to skip it? Or it was a playlist you didn't even really think much about. Or if you skip a song, is it because you don't like it, or was it because you're interested in the next song or you're in a different kind of mood? That's Spotify. Examples on TikTok would be you're staring at this piece of content. It irks you, you don't like it, but there's something a bit engrossing about it that you almost have to stare at it. But you know that the more you stare at it, the more it's going to give you stuff like that. So there's a sort of like a slight awareness of the surveillance, but there's not a lot of an ability to say, well, yes, there's most of these apps have a little thing on the corner, please don't show that to me again. But it's so much effort that essentially, it's not really most of the signal that the apps are getting. So yeah, so I think a lot has been said about the algorithms. Some people will brag about AI neural networks, deep neural networks. So I think a lot of bragging has to do with the algorithm, and the reason people are not shy to publish them is because they know the true values in the data that these companies have. And I guess that my interest and my worries have been a little bit more in, okay, how is this data collected? Does it reflect the intentions of and the opinions of the users? And my concern is to have a ratings app that is somewhat incorruptible because, in the music business, there are many people, especially artists, who would be incentivized to get good ratings. So they would give themselves good ratings, ask all their friends to do that. If a label got into it, they would get an army of people to give you good ratings. So I even think of the search bar as an interface choice that does affect these biases, like inflation bias. I've made a point to not have a search bar in Picky, so that is like a difficult design choice, because if you don't have a search bar, users may feel frustrated or disappointed. But for example, TikTok has shown just throwing stuff at someone can be interesting and can get pretty accurate. I would say that I've spent more time thinking about the data collection moment than the once I've collected this data, trying to build an algorithm that's better, which I spend a lot of time comparing in A/B testing algorithms. So I definitely do that. But I found that the magic happens at the collection of the data and whether it's intentional.
I like that. There's a lot to unpack there. So one of the things I want to delve deeper into is you mentioned implicit and explicit. So I think we can get a lot of bias out of that. So can you explain how models are built either on implicit data sets or explicit data sets and kind of the pros and cons of either?
Okay, the raw data of most of these apps collect is quite simple. Think of it as three columns: user ID, item ID, and number. So that number could be a rating, it could be a binary, like I've listened to it, or it could be a unit, like this person has played it. And you can think of that third column as the rating. So in an implicit data set, that third column is computed implicitly from the user behavior. That could be they've added it to a playlist, or they've listened to it more than 10 times, or they've delved on it more than 12 seconds. When you look at explicit data, so a classic explicit data set would be Yelp. I think most people know about Yelp. It's a 1 through 5 star rating. Same with Amazon products. And again, it's three columns: user ID, item ID, numerical value. But even though these two look exactly the same, explicit and implicit, they're quite different. The first one is maybe has some unintentional interpretations. The second one also has some problems. So explicit rating is not the answer to everything. What are some of the problems with explicit ratings? One of them is pure corruption. Like if you have a search bar, you can add yourself a lot of good rating. Another one is different people have different levels of pickiness. So some people give 5-star ratings to everything and abstain if they don't feel like it's 5 stars. They might feel it's like punishing the person and that it's, an act of, disrespect. That is a little bit how I interpret social media. Like you have a like button, you can abstain to like. That doesn't mean you don't like. Some people like almost everything they see, sometimes almost never use the like button. So there's this, I guess the fancy word would be heterogeneous users. And then different users have different, stronger impacts. So I've studied the Yelp data set. They've made a lot of ratings public. And I've noticed that indeed some users that I call inflating users give 5 stars to everything, or their average is 4.7 or something like that. And another batch of users, actually, their average rating is 3. They're very, disciplined. If it's okay, they'll give it a 3. If it's really good, a 4. Extraordinary, a 5. And what I've found is that actually these more picky raters are better for the system. So what do I mean by better? Well, when you aggregate their ratings, they are better predictors of the future long-term rating of the restaurant, and also which is correlated with the future success of a restaurant. So anecdotally, it's like imagine you have a group of friends and you have one that's really hard to please, and then you ask them, what's your favorite restaurant? And they tell you, oh, this one is amazing. Then somehow implicitly that data point is worth a lot more than your other friend who seems to like everything in their neighborhood because they love their neighborhood so much. So, which is a common thing in New York. Everyone is in love with their five blocks around them.
Again, you make a lot of good points, and I definitely relate to that. One of my favorite apps is Goodreads, but I have to really force myself to be fair, and I see myself inflating ratings because I'm like, oh, well, I like this author's other works. I don't want to disrespect their work, or I don't want to paint them poorly. So I definitely relate to that. So my next question is then with Picky, how do you incentivize your users to be more fair and to listen to a more diverse music selection so that they are being more appropriate in their ratings and they're not giving those inflated 5-star ratings everywhere?
The three feedbacks that the user can give is dislike, like, and super like. And we found that, and initially it was just like and dislike. And so we found that a lot of people just liked everything constantly. And a lot of other people disliked everything. So we were quite, there was a huge disparity between users. And then the problem was when I was trying to aggregate this at the song level, I found that if a song was highly rated, often it was just an artifact of generous people having rated that. And if it was poorly rated, it's an artifact of like it happened to be that hard-nosed listeners were rating that. So we then did some experiments where we started putting timers on the voting mechanism. So instead of the second you see the song, you could vote. The dislike button unlocked after 3 seconds, the like after 6 seconds, and the super like after 12 seconds. So what that meant is that the default is dislike. Like if you knew right away, sometimes you hear a song and it's just not your thing. People do that immediately. And then if you got likes, it meant that someone invested some time in it. And if you got a super liked, it really meant not only is this person delving more on this, but at the end, they decided, hey, I want this on my playlist. Or another feature is that you get notified when these artists play live. So there's an incentive to, if you really like it, to super like it. But there's also an incentive that if you're short on time and you're really not into this, you should dislike it. So that solved our real extreme cases of people who liked all the time. Now we got the opposite, which was people started disliking disproportionately. And then, at this point we have a pretty sophisticated system that adapts to your behavior. And if you're too generous, it makes you wait more. And if you're too picky, it makes you wait more in a different It makes it harder to dislike and easier to like. So we're nudging the interface, although many users may not really actually only feel it a bit subconsciously, the interface kind of ensures that there's not too much of this inflationary bias in the app.
Makes sense. So you mentioned that we are currently in a golden era of data and that tremendous opportunities and dangers lie ahead. So can you elaborate on both the treasures and the dangers and how we unpack that?
Yeah, the treasures is that some things that used to never be measured are now in a database and just need to be, you just need to squeeze some kind of great insight. And I think that the wave of what we're calling AI now, it is related to taking large amounts of creation of data and squeezing something new and useful out of it. I think the dangers are related to who owns these power centers, whether they're using sort of a monopoly power, almost like a tyrannical power. The power is so centralized that you can imagine pretty nefarious uses of data happening. And I guess, maybe on a more hopeful note, I think that the idea or of giving users or of these systems a dislike button or a power of dissent in a way is a way to fight back. And it's actually every time we get frustrated with, in quotes, the algorithm, or either the algorithm really is listening to me, or it doesn't like me, or it's trying to push me to do this, or it's these sort of feelings we have, an inability to dissent, which I think is quite, it's a difficult design choice to actually include negative feedback, because these apps don't want to remind you too much that you don't like them. But I think it's an essential way to aggregate dissent and to fight these centers of powers that are aggregating, whether it's the monopoly in search and advertising, or whether it's the power of superstars that control most of the airwaves. I'm hopeful that if we're better at collecting not just what you like, but what you dislike, I think we're going to improve these systems and allow for something a little bit less tyrannical to emerge.
So when we're liking and disliking, there's obviously so much data that's being analyzed. So how do you understand whether the likes or the dislikes are attributed to the music itself, to the lyrics, to let's say the message? So is this just through, again, hordes of data that you are able to paint this picture, or how do you understand what is being appreciated or unappreciated, and how do you know how to channel better music towards these listeners with that information?
So one paper that I didn't share with you, but maybe I can share later, is about when I think I had collected the first 500,000 ratings on Picky, and the exercise was, let's train a generic algorithm, a bit off the shelf matrix factorization algorithm, it's called, that essentially trained on likes and dislikes, and then recommended songs, and then compared these recommendations to things that had been hidden. And it's a very classic machine learning exercise of computing accuracy. And we compared the idea of training on like and dislike data and recommending to only training on like data, so dropping the dislikes and getting this sort of thinner input data, and seeing, okay, can the same exact algorithm using this different data set do as good? And yeah, the answer was not as good at all. So it looks like the algorithm trained on like and dislikes got to a level of accuracy that was much higher. So I guess that's, in a way, what I sort of tried to prove to myself, is that actually the dark side, or the dislikes, are helpful and sort of possibly useful in getting people a bit outside of their filter bubbles. So if you keep publishing your likes, this will tend to narrow you into the little predictable region. If you dare to like challenge people with things outside of their comfort zone, okay, most of the time they will dislike it, and that's interesting information. But you'll be surprised that maybe some genre that you thought you hated actually has a few gems that sort of seduce you. So I found sort of quantitatively that training an algorithm on binary data works much better than unary data. Now, does this answer the question you were asking, which is, do I know why they like it? No. Ultimately, this algorithm, which is collaborative filter, compares your likes and dislikes to other people's likes and dislikes, and infers people who like and dislike these things tend to super like these other things. And that's kind of how it works at the heart.
So to bring it back to the original question of your paper, are the popularities of artists like Justin Bieber and Taylor Swift truly justified? How do you measure their music when it's more than their music that attracts their fan base? So for instance, I don't care for either of their music, But I'm a fan of Taylor Swift and the message she puts out there. So if her music comes on, I don't really know much about it, but I would leave it on simply because I know her, of her, I like her. So how do you measure that when so much more information needs to be analyzed now because we are attracted to the people and their images and their brands?
As I mentioned at the beginning, we just had like and dislike, and there was quite a bit of ambiguity because sometimes people came across a song they grew up listening to, but now they're not listening to it again. So the question is, oh, do I like it? Or I don't want to dislike it, but I'm not interested in it and I'm over it, which could be like how you feel about Taylor Swift. You're somewhat liking it, but do you want it in your playlist right now? No, thanks. It's fine. So adding the super like with an unlock speed that's much longer. So just to make that a very special, rare thing, I think helped us dissociate the, oh, I like it or I recognize it, it's popular, to the, ooh, I kind of want to hear the whole thing because, these are short music clips. If you hear something that entices you, A, that's new, it's an emerging cool artist, and that tends to get a lot more super likes. And in fact, that was one of the two results of this Justin Bieber paper. Was the first one was the more popular you are, the more likes you'll get. And that in a way justifies the status quo and the system as it is like, oh, maybe these celebrities are deeper, more liked, and that's why they're popular. So this sort of like, oh, quality equals quality sort of implicit assumption. Now, when it comes to super liking, I found that actually the super liked artist actually peaked around the middle class. So people are not super liking someone who's very much a beginner and hasn't honed their art very well. They like the celebrities like your Taylor Swift and Justin Bieber, but do they feel tremendous excitement when they see that? No, it's a bit like a passive endorsement. And the fun part, or the part that actually Picky focuses on, is that middle part that makes people go, oh, that I want on my playlist. I'm keeping that. And or that I would go see their show. Like that more intense measurement of interest, that's kind of what the users of Picky are more interested in. But I do think there was an interpretation to make about popularity, whether it's justified or not. And what, this think of I think of super liking as super fans, people who will show up at the show, people who will buy a t-shirt, people who will just buy a vinyl when they don't even have a record player, like that kind of interest that might be predictive of the future stars. So that was sort of my insight, is that we do like celebrities, but we're a bit tired of them as well.
I think that makes sense. I'm starting to better understand. I might like Taylor Swift, but I would super like Pink Floyd. So I'm glad the algorithm can help me separate the two. I do not want them on the same playlist. But with all that said, there's so much more to unpack. But for the final question, is there anything you want to stress either about these biases in general or about what Picky does to make sure that it mitigates these biases? Anything you want to leave our listeners with?
Well, other than please download this app and try it out. It's called Picky, Piki. And you can find it on any app store. In a way, what I'm trying to do, and the latest developments in this app, is to combine my interest in music, but also in investing. And so there is a gamified part of this app that it allows people to not just make playlists, but invest in their opinions and in the music. And it's kind of a fun game. So I guess I would just encourage people to try it out, and I hope that my insights on biases are helpful to you, to your audience as well.
I love it. Thank you so much, Sasha, for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Technically Biased, the podcast that discusses bias in tech. Have a good one, everyone.